Within hours, Spence is nearly deserted. Only a handful of us remain. All day long, girls have been leaving. From my window, I've watched them step out into the cold wind for the carriage ride to the train station. I've watched their goodbyes, their promises to see each other at this ball or that opera. It's a wonder they carry on so, with tears and I'll miss yous, since it seems as if they will scarcely be apart. I've the run of the place, and so I spend some time exploring, climbing steep stairs into thin turrets whose windows give me a bird's-eye view of the land surrounding Spence. I flit past locked doors and dark panelled rooms that seem more like museum exhibits than living, breathing places. I wander until it is dark and past the time when I should be in bed, not that I think anyone shall be searching for me. When I reach my own floor, I am stopped cold. One of the enormous doors to the burned remains of the east wing has been left ajar. A key juts from the lock. In the time I've been here, I've never seen these doors unlocked, and I wonder why they should be opened now when the school is empty. Nearly empty. I creep closer, trying not to make a sound. There are voices coming from inside. It takes me a moment, but I recognise them. Mrs. Nightwing and Miss McCleavy. I cannot hear them clearly. The wind pushes through like a bellows, sending puffs of words out to me.
Must begin. London. They'll help us. I've secured it.
I am too afraid to peer in, so I put my ear to the crack, just as Mrs. Nightwing says.
I shall take care of it. It is my charge, after all.
With that, Miss McCleavy steps through the door, catching me.
Eavesdropping, Miss Doyle? She asks, her eyes flashing. What is it? What's the matter?
Mrs. Nightwing demands.
Miss Doyle, what on earth?
I am sorry, Mrs. Nightwing. I heard voices.
What did you hear?
Mrs. Nightwing asks. Nothing, I say.
You expect us to believe you?
Miss McCleavy presses. It's true, I lie. The school is so empty, and I was having trouble sleeping. Miss McCleavy and Mrs. Nightwing exchange glances.
Get on to bed, then, Miss Doyle, Mrs. Nightwing says. In the future, you should make your presence known at once.
Yes, Mrs. Nightwing, I say, nearly running to my room at the end of the hall. What were they speaking of? Must begin what? With effort, I remove my boots, dress, corset, and stockings till I am down to my chemise. There are exactly 14 pins in my hair. I count them as my trembling fingers remove each one. My coppery curls roll down my back in a sigh of relief. It's no good. I'm far too jittery to think of sleep. I am in need of a distraction, something to ease my mind. Beneath her bed, Anne keeps a stack of magazines, the sort that offer advice and show the latest fashions. On the cover is an illustration of a beautiful woman. Her hair is adorned with feathers, her skin is creamy perfection, and her gaze manages to be both kind and pensive, as if she's staring off into the sunset while also thinking of bandaging the skinned knees of crying children. I do not know how to accomplish such a look. I find myself with a new fear that I shall never, ever be this lovely. I sit at the dressing table, staring at myself in the mirror, turning my face this way and that. My profile is decent. I've a straight nose and a good jaw. Turning to the mirror again, I take in the freckles and pale brows. Hopeless. It isn't as if there's something horrific about me. It's just that there's nothing that stands out. No mystery. I'm not the sort one would picture on the cover of penny magazines, gazing adoringly into the distance. I am not the sort who is pined for by admirers, the girl immortalized in song. And I cannot say that it doesn't sting to know this. When I attend dinners and balls, if I attend any, that is, what will others see in me? Will they even notice? Or will sighing brothers and dear old uncles and distant cousins of other cousins be forced to dance with me out of some sense of politeness because their wives, mothers, and hostesses have forced them into it?